Rwanda-backed M23 rebels take control of a major city in the Democratic Republic of Congo and vow to take the capital.
We will continue the March of Liberation all the way to Kinshasa.
What's the fighting about and what's at stake?
I think I can drum up about 10 scenarios at this point that could spark a regional war. It is an incredibly tense situation.
Today is Friday, January 31st, and this is The Issue from VOA.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
And I'm Scott Walterman.
It is a very serious problem.
President Trump commenting on the situation in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where the rebel group M23 has captured the eastern city of Goma and plan to take their fight to the far-off capital, Kinshasa.
Congo's president has called for a massive military mobilization to resist the rebellion, and his defense minister rejected calls for talks. Another player is Rwandan President Paul Kagame. He has backed the M23 rebels, and Reuters correspondent Rachel Graham reports Kagame says he's ready for any confrontation.
The long-simmering conflict in Congo has intensified over the last week, with M23 rebels capturing the strategic city of Goma. Congo, South Africa, and others accuse Rwanda of backing M23. Kagame has rejected criticism over his country's role in the conflict. During a virtual summit of East African leaders, Kagame accused South African President Cyril Ramaphosa of distorting recent conversations about the conflict.
He's also there pretending to be playing a peacemaker role, and he has a force that has been fighting alongside FDLR and has been fighting the M23 on the instructions of Tshisekedi, because these are people who are not supposed to be in Congo, that these are from Rwanda, or the M23 are not Rwandans, please.
Congo President Felix Tshisekedi did not attend the virtual summit. Instead, he gave a speech to the nation in which he promised a military campaign to recover lost territory. Rwanda is facing an international backlash over its actions in eastern Congo. It has repeatedly intervened there, either directly or through allied militias, over the past 30 years in the aftermath of the Rwandan genocide. The United States has told Rwanda it is deeply troubled by Goma's fall. Germany has cancelled aid talks with Rwanda, while Britain said the $40 million of annual bilateral assistance it gives to Kigali were under threat. After seizing Goma, M23 fighters were advancing south from the town of Minova along the western side of Lake Kivu. Goma itself is a lakeside city of nearly 2 million, and a major hub for displaced people and aid groups. M23 says it plans to administer the city and appears to be settling in for a lengthy period of control. Scores of Congolese asylum seekers who fled to Rwanda during recent fighting are returning home, following assurances of safety from the rebel group.
That's Reuters correspondent Rachel Graham reporting. Now, you heard Rachel mention that M23 has taken control of Goma and plans on running it. Reuters correspondent David Doyle reports building an administration in Goma could be the key to the success of their entire offensive.
Rwandan-backed rebels appear keen to show they can not only seize the biggest city in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, but also govern it. That's a stark contrast to the last time M23 took Goma, back in 2012. Then they withdrew a few days later. But this time, how well the rebels can maintain order and run services in a city of 2 million people could be key to determining if their offensive expands or is doomed to failure. At a press conference, Corne Nangar, head of the Congo River Alliance that includes M23, said they had found Goma to be a wounded city, traumatized and fearful.
Nous sommes ici à Goma.
We are here in Goma to stay as Congolese and to protect the population against threats.
Protéger la population contre les insécurités.
We will continue the March of Liberation all the way to Kinshasa.
Libération jusqu'à Kinshasa.
The former president of Congo's election commission pledged to get children back in school within 48 hours and to open a humanitarian corridor so displaced people could return home. Since Goma's capture, power and mobile data services, which had been down for days, have also returned. The border with Rwanda, a lifeline for the city, has reopened. And M23 officials said they had trained up hundreds of administrators who were ready to deploy. However, the World Food Programme has expressed concern over the lack of aid access to Goma and surrounding displacement camps. It warned that people are running out of food, medical care, and drinking water. On Thursday, these Goma residents were turning to Lake Kivu after fighting disrupted the city's water supplies. Bonchance Mapendo said he was praying this would be his last trip.
Because we, the people, are the ones they came to govern. And without water, we cannot live. They must do everything possible to restore our water supply.
What's at stake is a potential return to the situation that arose in the 1990s and 2000s. Back then, Rwanda, Uganda, and their proxy forces occupied and ran Congo's mineral-rich eastern borderlands, managing trade, communications, and transport. In the 3 years since M23 reignited its rebellion, having been dormant for a decade, it set up parallel administrations in areas it's conquered, UN experts said in June. That involved taxing civilians and businesses and rolling out intelligence networks. In December, UN experts said the insurgents had generated an income of $800,000 per month after taking control of Rubaya, the largest coltan mine in the country. But Goma, with its population size, international airport, and role as a hub for one of the world's biggest humanitarian crises, remains a far greater challenge.
That was David Doyle with Reuters reporting.
A big country, a lot of land, and there are a lot of players, Lori, in this situation, not just Rwanda and the rebels and the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yeah, and it's a big story that, of course, is not getting as much attention that it might in some other day.
Well, especially because there's a lot of international implication here. There is a huge contest in the entire continent of Africa involving Russia and the United States and China. So let's get some insights into this evolving situation with Michelle Gavin, a senior fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations.
First of all, if you can just kind of explain what is happening in Goma and what is this fighting all about?
What's happening is that the city of Goma, which is a very significant city in terms of population and is the capital of North Kivu, has fallen to the M23 rebel group. Now, Eastern Congo has been dealing with insecurity for many decades, and there are many armed groups that operate there. So this is not, the whole story about security in Eastern Congo, but this is the crisis of the moment. The M23 is a rebel group that is backed by Rwanda. There's evidence, too, of backing from Uganda. And they have seized Goma before in 2012. They claim that their aim is to go all the way to Kinshasa and to essentially overthrow the government there. But what's happening right now is they are moving into South Kivu toward Bukavu, which is the capital of South Kivu. And these are two provinces that are very rich in minerals. So why is this happening? Well, there are multiple threads to pull there. First, you have the government of Rwanda claiming that it has legitimate security concerns about Eastern Congo. They share a border, obviously, and to the extent that Rwanda even acknowledges its military presence in the region and support for the M23, the reasoning is that this is necessary to protect Rwanda and particularly to go after the FDLR, which is sort of what's left of the genocidal regime responsible for the tragedy of 1994. And that it's necessary to protect ethnic Tutsis who live in Eastern Congo and protect them from persecution. But there also is a great deal of evidence that some of these very lucrative minerals in Eastern Congo are mined there, taken across the border to Rwanda, and then sold. So there are clear economic imperatives here as well.
The Republic is very large. I mean, they're vowing to go to the capital, but that's all the way on the other side of a very big country.
That's right. It's a huge country. I mean, it has happened before, right? The fall of Mobutu occurred with a movement that began in the east and essentially swept through the country. But it's not at all clear that this is a similar set of circumstances. You have a great deal of anti-Rwanda sentiment in Congo. There's a lot of nationalist sentiment, a lot of frustration with the violations of Congolese sovereignty. So I don't think it would be as easy as it was when you had a population exhausted by the Mobutu years. But perhaps, you know, perhaps this is rhetoric. Perhaps it's a real ambition. It's very difficult to know.
What are other countries saying about this?
Well, there are a number of countries with very clear stakes here. So fighting alongside the Congolese forces who lost Goma, you have militia forces, Congolese militia forces, but also some Burundian troops. You had peacekeepers attempting not to fight on one side or the other, but to de-escalate conflict and provide security, both from a UN mission and from a mission from the Southern African Development Community. And over a dozen peacekeepers have been killed in this latest advance. So you have, for example, quite a number of South African peacekeepers killed. And you've seen escalatory, very bellicose rhetoric from President Ramaphosa and President Kagame about this issue. So you have those increasing tensions. So you have a lot of concern among African leaders. Kenyan President Ruto has tried to mediate. President Lourenco of Angola has been engaged in a long but unfortunately failed mediation. And then you have broader global leaders, many of whom are now saying Rwanda needs to stop its support for M23. But what we saw the last time the M23 took Goma was that what it took was to threaten aid flows to Rwanda, to threaten sanctions, and really go beyond sort of shaming rhetoric to change the calculus in Kigali.
You know, you mentioned Burundi. I believe they have thousands of troops inside Congo, right? They're
yes.
hunting down rebels. If this fighting, if M23 takes on those troops, might that spark a regional war?
Absolutely. I think I can drum up about 10 scenarios at this point that could spark a regional war. It is an incredibly tense situation because there are so many troops operating in Eastern Congo, Burundians, Ugandans, Rwandans, South Africans. You had Romanian mercenaries working on the side of the Congolese government. So there are a lot of ways that this escalates, and you know, it's any escalation, I think, is very, very unlikely to be contained within Congo's borders.
And of course, that seems like it would potentially, or would it potentially lead to yet another global humanitarian crisis?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, the DRC is already in terrible humanitarian crisis. The number of displaced people in Congo is second only to Sudan. So more displaced than Ukrainians or Gazans. It's so over 21 million people need humanitarian assistance. It's already in crisis. And this is just exacerbating an already very, very difficult situation.
In a region that is very volatile, I mean, I think to go back to Burundi, weren't there hundreds of thousands of people killed in that civil war, the rebels that they're hunting down?
Yes, Burundi's civil war was atrocious, and there are even worse atrocities in Burundian history. So you're quite right. A look at the history of the Great Lakes region gives one a sense of just how badly wrong things can go when conflict gets out of hand. And I very much think that the stakes are extremely high right now.
It's just so, I can't help but think about what Rwanda went through with its own genocide, that it would be willing and supporting of a mission to do something of this magnitude.
Well, you know, Rwanda's been engaged in Eastern Congo for many, many years. Again, they claim for that very reason, for exactly what you just cited, that it's about their own security. But the truth is they have exported insecurity to Eastern Congo. They have made ethnic Tutsi there the target of persecution rather than protecting them. And the interesting moment in which we find ourselves is that Rwanda has been a security exporter in other situations, which makes it hard to put pressure on them. So Rwandans provide important security in northern Mozambique. They contribute to peacekeeping missions. They have this very capable and disciplined military, and they're willing to use it. So it becomes difficult for those who rely upon Rwandans for security in one place to condemn their exporting of insecurity in this context.
Lastly, what are the implications or potential implications with this situation and the United States?
The last time, again, that M23 took Goma, it was U.S. Pressure along with other actors that helped to freeze and then de-escalate that situation. But right now, it's very unclear how the U.S. understands its role in the world and certainly in this region, what we think leadership means. We have an aid freeze right now, which makes it hard to use aid as leverage because it's not flowing to anyone, regardless of their behavior. But I would say that, you know, the critical minerals that come out of Eastern Congo are a part of the lifeblood of our digital economy now. And the potential for an even greater humanitarian crisis and for this conflict to suck in other states and potentially to merge to some degree with other crisis zones on the continent, creating a toxic mix, that creates a lot of opportunity for U.S. adversaries, for international criminals, for extremist groups. And so at the end of the day, what's happening in Congo is not going to stay there. And the U.S. does have security concerns and economic concerns that will be at risk as this situation escalates.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about it. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for covering it.
Michelle Gavin, Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations.
The continent of Africa, so many variables and so many different issues that really do impact everyone around the world. It's fascinating to hear what she had to say.
So many players in the situation on the continent, not just the nations that exist there, but again, the external forces, Europe, the United States, Russia, China, all vying to be the dominant player on the continent as it emerges as the next major place on the globe to be.
You've been listening to The Issue from The Voice of America.
On behalf of everyone who works at VOA all over the world, thank you so much for joining us.
You can follow The Issue on X, Blue Sky, and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24 hours a day, check out our website at voanews.com.
In Washington, I'm Scott Wolterman.
And I'm Lori London. We'll talk to you soon.